Yes, yes, Christy had a lot of announcements. But I got a microphone. I'm excited about three things. I'm going to tell you what those three things are. Well, more than three, but I got three right now. Number one, again, baptisms today. What are you doing at 1 o'clock?
Baptism.
That's what you're doing. Even if it's cold, bring a jacket. You're going to be fine. I have like three fire pits. We can light them up. Just if there's a little kid around you, make sure they're not like, wee. Okay, just be careful. But you get jackets, blankets. We're not putting up the canopy over the yard because it's too windy and that would just be dangerous. But seriously, come celebrate the baptism, eat, and if it's like too cold, leave. That's fine. But we'd love for you to stay and hang out and get to know one another. So just come by. If it's horrible, you got a car, all right? Come by for baptisms. All right, the second thing that I'm kind of excited about is every Saturday right now, we are doing a men's study. And I, for a while, I didn't go the first few weeks, and then I went. I got to tell you, I really enjoyed it. We're inviting my GC guys to come and sit together and go through it. And it's like 7:30 to 9 o'clock. It's great. And I don't want to sound like I'm really surprised, but I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. So if you're a dude and Saturday morning comes along, 7:30, come to the men's study. Hang out with us. It's kind of cool. My third thing I'm excited about is we're going to do this ministry called The Classics. And The Classics is a senior ministry for people 60 and over. And I know, be like, I don't want to feel like I'm old, the senior ministry. So we're calling it The Classics. My wife and I, we have this classic car. And you know what's cool about a classic car? Everybody loves them. And there's no smog. But every time we go somewhere in our classic car, people want to talk to us because there's so much history behind it. And I think that's what's really cool is, you know, the older you get, there's so much life that has been lived. And when you come to this thing, that's why we want to call it The Classics, because it is classic. And we really think that as this ministry moves forward, we can connect it to different age groups. And there's a lot of wisdom that people who are of a certain age can help other people. And you are probably in a place where you have a little bit more free time than you had before. And what we would like you to do is, if you were interested at all in that, to next Sunday after this service, that you will go to the barn and it will be a short little meeting. And we're just going to pick your brains about what this ministry could look like. And we have some ideas in that because we like to get you know, food. We at some point, we want to eat food because we all like food. But we want to get together and kind of talk about what that ministry could look like, especially after you get over 60 and maybe you're 70 or 80, and then there might be some care that needs to take place, how we can care for one another. But I'm just really excited about it. I think it can be really cool. The Classics, like a car. Okay. Welcome to Element if you're new. There are Bibles in the seat backs in front of you. I'm also excited about the Bible. If you don't own one, you can have one. If you forgot one, you can use one. There are sermon notes on the communion tables throughout the room. They look like this. And on the inside, you'll get a little recap of what we talk about today, some questions to remind you of what we talk about. On the back, you get the verses we're covering. On the bottom, you get a place for notes. If you have a smart device, you can download an app. It is called YouVersion. You click on More and then Events in YouVersion. We will come up by GPS in your smart device, and you will get the sermon notes, the verses, the questions, the announcements. All that goes with today's message. My name is Aaron. I'm one of the pastors at Element. I want you to stand with me for the reading of God's Word. This is Galatians chapter 4, verse 9, and it says, "But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more?" Let's pray. Father, this morning, we ask that you would teach us what it means to be those who understand the difference between worthless elementary principles and what it means to truly live and worship and walk with you in our lives. I ask that you would give us clarity and vision for the things in our lives that are ritual and legalism and not living in grace. And you would teach us to be those who live our lives in ways that you are the center of what we do. Amen. Have a seat. I see. All right, so we are going through the New Testament book of Galatians. This is week 15. And if you've been here for the last few months, you can probably tell, hopefully, that Galatians 3 and 4 are some of my favorite chapters in the Bible. And there are some chapters that people typically skip over. When people teach the book of Galatians, they'll hit like chapter 1, a little bit of chapter 2, 3, 4, then they'll hit 5, which gets more practical again in chapter 6. Chapter 3 and chapter 4 are so dense about the grace and the goodness of God. They tell us about who we are, who God is. They tell us about our adoption and what God has done and continues to do in our lives. Paul keeps talking about what maturity in Christ actually looks like, how we come to an understanding of what salvation truly is and what Jesus has done in the midst of that. And all these things that Paul talks about really can go to what we experience today, how we live our lives today, and we typically don't see it. And again, this is why I really have kind of slowed down in chapter 3 and chapter 4. We will speed up in a couple weeks. But I really slow down here because I think these are so important and so dense with so much stuff, and you can't write it off. I think when you understand what's here in chapter 3 and chapter 4, it really changes how you see the rest of Galatians and really the rest of the scriptures and our lives with God. Paul tells us today that we are all too eager to be those who go back to living our lives the way we did before we heard the gospel. Sometimes it's not the same way we used to live it, it's just different. And I almost called this message same but different, but I called it Worthless Elementary Principles because that's what Paul says. Where you do this podcast, you can get it if you want to, not a Sunday morning podcast, but it's a leadership podcast. And we take some leaders at Element, and we sit down every single week and we talk about the message and some of the questions that are in here. And if you're in a gospel community, how you can walk through some of those questions. And Kevin was on there this week, and Kevin goes, I thought when you said worthless elementary principles, I'm thinking, what principles did I have in elementary school that were worthless? Like, what are those guys? And it was really funny. That's why you should listen to it. You can, there's links to it at the Welcome Center if you want to listen to it. But we're not talking about your principal in elementary school, all right? N.T. Wright likened our lives sometimes to whales that are kept in captivity. Like, when whales are free, they swim around in the ocean, they'll come by ships, and they'll like, whoop, and they'll breach and do all kinds of crazy things. But some whales are kept in captivity in massive aquariums. A lot of them are very happy because they're fed well, they're well taken care of. You typically only hear the stories of the ones who aren't well taken care of, but whales are highly intelligent. They enjoy working and playing with humans. They apparently also enjoy performing in front of a crowd, just like your kids. How's that? So if you're well aware, you live in California, and not everybody approves of whales being kept in captivity. So we have this city down south called San Diego, and there is a large aquarium in San Diego. And there were some people a few years ago who decided to free Willie, and they got in there, and they get Willie, not his name wasn't Willie, but they take the whale, they get him out to the ocean, and the whale goes out into the ocean and just starts swimming around. He's like, yay, it's so happy. And you know what happened like an hour later? Swam right back to the aquarium because the whale's like, you know what, that was great, but I like being cared after. I like people feeding me. That's where I want to be. Paul, he kind of talks about that same thing here. Paul keeps referring to Israel, even though the Galatians were not Israelites. He keeps talking about the captivity and says we do the same thing. We end up getting so used to the captivity that we now live our lives differently, but we still long to go back to these different types of rituals. Paul reminds us that the children of Israel under Moses, they had come out of slavery. They cried out, God, free us from this oppression. So God hears their cry. And there's lots of excitement as God leads them into this Red Sea and takes them across. And now they're in this land that nobody owns. And God takes them through this desert land for like 40 years. And it starts to get hard. But they do get to live in freedom. But it is really hard. Behind them, they're Egyptians they're afraid of. The land of Canaan they're going to, they're afraid of the people who were there. Twice during this period of time, the Israelites try and install a different leader other than Moses to lead them back into Egypt, back into slavery. Because it's like, this freedom, it's way too hard. I really want to go back to those old rituals we used to have. After they get the promised land, like, okay, yeah, we're done with that slavery. Now we're free. But they start to indulge themselves. And they start to become slaves to all kinds of different paganism that was in the country where they went into. And so they've been set free, but yet those rituals they were so accustomed to, they just moved them into different ways. They got into idolatry. And really, the slavery was the same, but just a little bit different. Now, if you have a Bible, open to Galatians chapter 4. It's on page 632 if you have an Element Bible. And today, I don't have a nice three-point sermon for you. What I want to do is just kind of walk through this thing that Paul talks about. And then maybe we can take and see in our lives how we sometimes do the exact same thing. Because the Galatians, when Paul talks about this, they don't necessarily want to go back to their paganism. They are now wanting a different type of ritual. They are now wanting to follow the Jewish laws of ritual cleanliness. And so it's like, well, I didn't do that, but rituals are very familiar to me, and now I want to start doing these things. So it's a different type of slavery, same but different. Galatians chapter 4, starting in verse 8, Paul starts like this. Formerly, when you did not know God, referring to before they knew Jesus, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, and I like that Paul stops right there with that. He's all, look, you came to know who He is, but really what's more important is that God knows who you are. Paul will say this in 1 Corinthians 8, verses 2 and 3, that what really matters in our lives is not so much our knowledge of God, but God's knowledge of us. And so when Paul says this, that you're known by God, that's a way to go against their self-righteousness. It's not an, oh, look at me, look how smart I am, I know God. No, the bigger deal is that God knows you. We in ourselves don't have any reason to have right standing before God. Our right standing before God is because of what Jesus has done. Our salvation, our justification is all done because of what Jesus did. It's found in Christ. G.I. Packard wrote this whole book, and it's called Knowing God. And in the middle of this book, this is what he says. What matters supremely, therefore, is not in the last analysis the fact that I know God, but the larger fact which underlies it, the fact that He knows me. I am graven on the palms of His hands. I am never out of His mind. He knows me as a friend, one who loves me. And there is no moment when His eye is off me or His attention distracted from me. And no moment, therefore, when His care falters. Now, that does not mean you are the center of God's universe. It means that God is omniscient. He knows everything. And He knows you. He knows who you are. And that is Paul's point. Everything comes back to the good news of what Jesus did in our lives. So that's where our focus should be, not on our rituals. So, formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid that I have labored over you in vain. Now, this is a very astonishing claim that Paul makes. The Galatians, before they're converted to following Christ, they were enslaved to these worthless elementary principles. Again, not your school principles. And this is a way of saying gods who are not gods. In the ancient world, they were attributing everything to elements of nature, and there could be, you know, demons behind that or whatever, but they're these spiritual forces that needed to be appeased in order to get what you want from them. Now, sometimes I find it funny because people will make fun of Christianity, and they will say, oh, I can't believe you pray and worship Jesus, and then they'll turn around and they'll talk about karma or the universe or Mother Nature. I know a guy who thinks Christians are dumb, and yet when his sports team is doing well, he will eat the same food, sit in the same place on his couch, wear the same jersey, the same underwear, like he has something to do with it. Superstition, right? Oh, but you Christians, you're just weird. Yeah, whatever. So if you were a farmer in Paul's day and you needed rain, you might go and pray to the God that was over the area to make it rain. If you were going to go on a trip by the sea, well, then you would go and make sacrifices to Poseidon to make sure you got there. Okay, if you wanted to become pregnant, you would go to the fertility god. If you wanted to get married, you would go to Aphrodite and do the rituals and make the sacrifices. And Paul says, these gods are not gods, and you know it. The Bible is very clear in many places. Sometimes there are these spiritual forces behind the idols. And the reality is, and Paul is pointing this out, that these spiritual powers cannot deliver what they promise because they are not sovereign. They're not all powerful. The book of Job, part of the reason of that is to show us that, that these spiritual forces can only ever do what they're allowed to do. If you watch movies and you see things from Hollywood, there's always this cosmic struggle, right? It's God and the devil, and they're both really powerful. Who's going to win? Ooh, I don't know. It's really, oh, like nail biters. No, in the book of Job, the accuser, the word for that is the Satan. The accuser wants to cause Job a bunch of problems because God likes Job, just like God likes you. And Satan asks to attack Job, and God's going to let him. But God will say, you can do this, but you can't do that. and you can do that, but you can't do this. And you may wonder why God wouldn't just say no. If you have a lot of questions and think that sounds cruel, you can go back to our Job series about a year and a half ago and walk through that. But what happens by God allowing this trial in Job's life is that Job's life grows exponentially. Job has a deeper relationship with God. He's got a more full life with his family than he ever would have had if God didn't allow this trial in his life. In the gospel accounts, if you ever read them, when Jesus confronts a demon, they don't argue. Jesus never goes, "Come out of that man." And the demon's like, "No way, I'm like COVID. I'm always coming back. You're never getting rid of me." Demons don't do that. Never happens. Like demons, even in bulk, "I am legion." In Matthew chapter 8 and Luke 4, they're terrified of Jesus. They cry out in fear. That's not, "I wonder who's going to win." This is Jesus has supreme authority over all realms, including the supernatural. And Paul reminds them, you don't have to view the world through the lens of your culture, through paganism, through Hollywood. We get to see and know the truth. And this is where the text then gets interesting. Verse 10, Paul says, "You observe days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid that I may have labored over you in vain." What Paul says is, I'm not really afraid of you going back to worship demons, but by referencing days and weeks and seasons and years, he's referring to Judaism, to Jewish practices of holiness, a different type of ritual, same but different. It would be a way to even try to manipulate God. I'm doing all the right things, therefore, God, you owe me this. You can be enslaved to a false gospel, not just through weird acts of paganism, but also through legalism. See, in the days here would reference like daily dietary laws. If it talks about weeks, weeks would be like Sabbath observances. Months would be new moon rituals. Seasons would be Passover and Pentecost and tabernacles. Years would be the year of Jubilee or the sabbatical year. And I know you think, sabbatical year? That sounds wonderful. You had one. It was called COVID. Nobody did well. Okay, so Paul is saying, you were once enslaved to demons via paganism, and I fear you're going to be enslaved once again through religious observance. So let me stop and make something perfectly clear. Paul is not saying you can't celebrate holidays. We are not getting rid of Christmas. If Element got rid of Christmas, I would leave too, all right? We can't take Paul's text and make a reverse type of legalism that says any type of external celebration is ungodly. Now, there are people who do this, like Jehovah's Witnesses, aside from the rest of their horrible theology, they don't actually celebrate any holidays. You know what's a funny one to me? The pilgrims. The pilgrims come to the New World and they would not celebrate holidays, especially Christmas. They say it's just another day, it's another work day, and so we're not going to do any of that. Now, for me, what's funny is that 150 years later, we make a holiday for them, right? They're like, this is paganism, we're not going to do this, it's sinful. And we're like, okay, Thanksgiving, let's celebrate your holiday. It's kind of funny. Now, we got to understand all of the Bible in context. Paul, in the book of Romans, will say that a day or a festival or a meal, it's not evil or good within itself. It's how do we use it? Romans 14, verses 5 and 6. One person regards a certain day above others, while someone else considers every day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. He who observes a special day does so to the Lord. He who eats does so to the Lord, for he gives thanks to God. And he who abstains does so to the Lord and gives thanks to God. Paul's point is, if you are celebrating seasons and rhythms and times, it matters how we use those things that determine if they're evil or good. So let me do this. Let's make it practical for us. Sunday morning gatherings. I'm glad you're here. We're all together. That's kind of great. But hopefully we come together and our goal today is not to worship demons or idols. But according to this text, that is only true if we come here today and we are wanting to worship Jesus, to see what he has to say to us. If our first goal of walking in this room is, well, the music wasn't good enough for me today. Aaron's talked way too fast today. Talked too slow today. That never happened. So talk too fast. Or I didn't like the sermon today. I didn't feel this way. Well, you've made it about you. And you're the idol. I'm not saying that I can't do better, all right? I get that. But it's about you. If you come here because you think your attendance somehow makes you in a better standing relationship with God or somehow saves you, then you have bought into a belief system that has your attendance as a means of salvation. And according to the text, you are enslaved to worthless elementary principles. What you're doing here is worshiping idols, whether it's demons or yourself, but it's not Jesus. Now, the day I started putting this message together, one of our elders, Mike Harmon, he sends me this video of a guy named John Lynch. And John Lynch is speaking at this centennial service to a college known as BIOLA, Bible Institute of Los Angeles. Now, I don't agree with all of Lynch's theology. Mike loves him. I think Mike's theology is better than Lynch's. But anyway, Lynch, in this whole talk, without referencing Galatians at all, centers the context really on what Paul says here. Lynch says, when he became a Christian, he kept hearing about the thing that would make him a superior follower of Christ. Do this thing and you will really love and follow Jesus. You're going to get strong and buck up and get fired up and walk worthy of Jesus. And he says, we all buy it. And we do. So there are techniques and books that people read. Pray this prayer every day, this long for 40 days, and God will give you whatever you want. That's voodoo. That's not Christianity. But we all have these techniques that make God proud of us, so we're living right. And then we try harder, and you get burned out, and you get jaded, and people start to say, well, God doesn't work. Well, you were never really in a relationship with God. You're in relationship with a ritual, with a worthless elementary principle. That's what you're in relationship with. But yet, even in the midst of that, people cover up and they lie and they say, oh no, I'm doing really well, when we know we're not. We think we need to grow up and somehow change ourselves in our own strength. And we buy into appeasing the gods, only this time we slap the word Jesus on it. But it's voodoo and it's paganism and it's the same story of humanity. Same, but different. So Lynch talks about seeing people who live these really great lives. He's like, this is amazing. What do you do? Well, we pray 2 to 3 hours a day. He goes, okay, that's what I want. I want to be like that. I want to pray 2 to 3 hours a day. So he started with an hour. And he says, 5 minutes in, he is off the rails. He's praying for countries. He doesn't know if they're real. He's praying for people. John Hookabaloo, God touched that guy. I don't even know who it is, but maybe I got to pray for an hour here. And he said he kept going through all these things, and it led him further away from a relationship with God by trying to do a ritual, trying to do something in his faith that others told him he needed to do. And essentially he says, my relationship with God, it suffered. Rather than having like 15 minutes of focused prayer a day, trying to do an hour really led him away. And I know this is true for me. I cannot sit down for an hour or 2 or 3 hours and pray. I pray for maybe 10, 15 minutes in the morning, but I still pray all the time throughout the day. If you add it all together, I might get up to a couple hours, and God's probably like, I wish that guy would stop talking to me. Because I talk to him about everything. Everything. Even when I'm a dummy, I'm talking to God about that. But it may end up being that. And I feel like that is what develops my relationship. If you are someone who prays a couple hours a day and your relationship with God is deep, that's amazing. Keep going. Woo. But if you are someone who's like, man, I can't pray a couple hours a day. I can maybe get 5 or 10 minutes in. If that grows your relationship with God, great. The point is relationship with God, growing with Him. And the more that we begin to live in relationship with Him, the more we'll want to actually spend more time with Him. And so when Lynch talks about this, he says, instead of pouring my heart and life out to God, I was really pouring my heart out to myself and my mind trying to do this thing. See, some people do this and they take a system as a mode of faith. That doesn't mean that faith is genuine. It means we're running after a legalism. And in the end, it is a form of slavery and paganism. It is a worthless elementary principle. And if you look at the TV shows and the movies that have a Christian on there at some point, what they do is Christianity looks like paganism. It does not look like Christianity. And why do I tell you this? Or why does Paul say this? Because you may be laboring under the assumption that your legalism is faith, and it is not. Guys, I want all of us to gather together. I think it's great when we join together in a room like this. I love it when you sing, and you sing so loud that you drown out the band. I know it's hard because they're loud, but and not that I want to hear the band, but I love that when it happens. I love when we open the Bible and we talk about things and you take notes and you're like this, and you're totally engaged. That's amazing. But if you think, hey, it's Sunday, this is what I have to do, then you miss the point. You miss the point. And I don't mean that sometimes if you don't feel like going to church, you still get up and you go to services, because God does call us to gather together. But if you think doing it makes God love you more, then you've missed the point. That's not Christianity, it's paganism. And this is why so many people today are weary and heavy laden, because there's so many burdens placed upon them. Jesus does say that he has a yoke that he does place upon us, but he goes, my yoke is light. What I want you to do is live and walk in relationship with me and trust me. See, we don't typically walk in the victory that Christ bought for us because we tend to walk in rituals. The danger of so many of us today is that we think we know who God is because of our rituals, but we don't have any idea that we don't really know him because we are equating our relationship with moral behavior or being better than someone who's sitting next to me. And the text says what happens in Galatia always tends to happen, that we become enslaved to worthless elementary principles. It's like this. The Galatians, before they ever followed Christ, they were into paganism. And if you stumbled upon one of their pagan rituals, you'd probably be like, yeah, that's dark and spooky. There's probably some demons in the midst of that because I've seen the movies and that's weird. This culture was into everything from temple prostitution to self-mutilation to human sacrifice. But what Paul is saying is we are kind of in the same boat as that when we use a holiness standard as our means of salvation. It's the same, but different. And again, not that there is anything wrong with church attendance. We should gather together. God calls us to do that. Should we be better people, more moral people? Of course we should. I think being in a gospel community is spectacular as we gather together and encourage one another to grow deeper in knowing Jesus. But again, if you use a gospel community as your litmus test for salvation, you're enslaved to something that it cannot deliver what you think it's promising. Do you understand that? Again, being here this morning is not going to make God love you more. It's not what happens. Joining a GC does not justify you before a holy God. What they are tools that God gives us to be able to use. They are elementary principles, but they're not necessarily worthless as long as we don't worship them. They are things we can actually have and do in our lives that are very good for us when we are in grateful and glad submission to Jesus. They are used by God's Spirit to mature and grow us, but they are not silver bullets that save us. What seems to be the impetus for what Paul writes here is not that they're keeping the days and the festivals. Paul will even speak the first day of the week in 1 Corinthians 16:2 as a great day to gather to worship Jesus. But what matters to Paul is the Galatians are insisting on keeping the Jewish festivals as the center of their worship, because the whole point of these festivals was to look forward to what God would one day do in Jesus. One day God's going to do this, and they keep celebrating these. But what happened? Jesus actually already came when the Galatians knew this. Paul's like, why do you keep celebrating? God, come do this thing. When God's like, I did the thing. I did the thing. Why do you keep asking me to do the thing that I already did? They are saying by the observances that they aren't sure that God did what he said he did. The whole point of the gospel of Jesus Christ is that God has done what he promised. God did this, and he is true, and he is good. Paul, in my head voice exasperation, says he's beginning to wonder if he wasted his time and effort over them because he doesn't understand what they're doing now. The heart of the passage is a call to find freedom in knowing and walking with the true God. I think if we have lives of devotion, that we gaze in adoration at who God is, we see his character and his actions, and we look at that and we study them, that will set us free from the rule of other gods. N.T. Wright says this though, but the other gods will continually whisper to us that we might actually prefer being enslaved to them again. And this is why so many people love the rules, because the rules are easier to follow than living in true and real freedom. And we will take these rules and turn them into different things like racial or tribal identity or political adherence or geographical or territorial loyalty or even what sports team you prefer. And it's so much harder to actually live in true freedom where no one is perfect, but everybody's welcome. Paul reminds the Galatians that God has acted. We have tasted the goodness of that salvation. We have tasted the goodness of our adoption. And if we go back now, we're not only just denying who God calls us to be, but we deny God himself. This is also a good thing where 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, where he says, when we are faithless, he remains faithful. It is a good thing that God is so much better than us to draw us back to himself again, over and over and over, even when we run to these worthless elementary principles. Now, I almost ended my message right there. I almost ended right there. But as I was reading through some other things, as I'm wont to do, I came across this really great quote from the church father Augustine. So you look at the Galatians, you look at us today in the middle of that fourth century, you have Augustine, and he's going through the exact same thing. And again, this always happens. And so he talks about this, that he found it so hard to break free from his old habits that had a stranglehold on him. This is what he writes. He goes, I was held back by mere trifles, the most paltry inanities, all my old attachments. They plucked at my garment of flesh and whispered, are you going to dismiss us? From this moment, we shall never be with you again forever and ever. From this moment, you will never again be allowed to do this thing or that forevermore. What was it, my God, that they meant when they whispered this thing or that? Things so sordid and so shameful that I beg you in your mercy to keep the soul of your servant free from them. These voices, as I heard them, seemed less than half as loud as they had been before. They no longer barred my way, blatantly contradictory, but their muttering seemed to reach me from behind, as though they were stealthily plucking at my back, trying to make me turn my head when I wanted to go forward. Yet in my state of indecision, they kept me from tearing myself away, from shaking myself free of them and leaping across the barrier to the other side where you were calling me. Habit was too strong for me when it asked, do you think you can live without these things? Now, the answer is, of course, you can live without those things. But see, he says, they're no longer just directly in front of me. What they are is they are behind me, and they keep just nipping at my heels and in my back. I got a puppy. I know what this is like. They keep nipping right behind you to get you to turn. What? Don't you want this ritual? So, yeah, I think I'd rather have that. And we go same but different, just into a different way. When life with Jesus gets hard, we are tempted to turn back to our old attachments, which Augustine calls the paltry inanities and mere trifles. They cry out to us, hey, this can work for you again. Maybe not the same way, but just a little bit different. You can turn it to look at it this way. There is this old song, and it goes, I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. And part of that sounds like, oh, buck up, don't back. But I think part of that is understanding that we live trusting Him. Our life with Christ lies in front of us. Those worthless elementary principles, they lie behind us. They are back there. So we fix our hearts and mind on Christ and what the gospel truly is. I think when we become a people who understand that, the motivation that we have in our lives is not the ritual. The motivation is understanding the love of Christ over us, and that begins to change us. That begins to lead us into the places where we actually live in true grace and true freedom, where John Lynch looks at all those people who are like, look how deep and spiritual their lives are. It looks so wonderful. Well, he sees that in them, hopefully because those people, it's not the things that they did. It's the love of Christ that they understood that led them to that place. And sure, maybe some of them prayed 2 hours a day. Woo, good on them, right? But maybe some of them were just in a place where they understood God's grace in such a deep way that they were able to trust Him in every single moment. And what that does for us is it brings a profound, deep sense of joy, of hope, and ultimately of freedom, that you are free from all of those rituals. You are free from the worthless things that want to hold you down, the things that want to continue to try and pull you back. And we get to live in freedom. And again, there's not certain things that I'm not saying we don't do in our life. We should gather together. We should read the Bible. But again, those things don't save us. They are tools that God can use to grow us, to help us understand who He is better. We are not saved by our works, by our rituals. We are saved by the grace of God. And I think the more that we understand the grace of God, the more that we as a people will want to begin to worship and live for Him every day of our life as a response to what He's done. And this is one of the reasons every week at Element, we take you to communion, where it is a reminder of the goodness and the grace of God. While you break the cracker that reminds us of His body that was broken, and you dip it in the wine or the grape juice, reminding us of His blood that was shed for you and me because of what He has done. Not because what who we are, but because of who He is, His great love given to us. And that brings us to a place of humbleness. And if you need prayer today, there are going to be people right across the way in the lounge that you can go during music, you can go after service. They love to pray and talk with you. If you are in a place where you have all these rituals in your life that you think you need to do, or God doesn't love you or care about you, or your life's not going to go the way that you want, they would love to talk to you and pray about that. Because Jesus wants us to live in freedom. And again, as I said, freedom is very hard to live in, but grace is so deep. I do not think we'll ever find the bottom of that well, Because God is so good. And if you want someone to pray with you, they'd love to pray with you. There's offering boxes next to the side walls. You can give online. And we give, again, because of what Christ has first done for us. The great generosity of God. It's always in response. So we never pass a plate. And I would encourage you guys to take those sermon notes and those questions that are in there and talk to some friends or your family. If you're in a gospel community, talk to them. What are your elementary principles or your worthless elementary principles that you have in your life that you tend to fall back into? Maybe they're not the same as before you knew Christ, but maybe they're a little bit different, but they kind of relate the same way, same but different. What do they look like? And be honest enough to recognize it, because I think every single one of us falls into a trap where when we think we are doing well, we're like, oh, God's really pleased with me now. And we think when we're not doing well, we're like, oh no, we're really humble in those moments. Like, oh, I must be doing really bad. And we got to understand, God sees us with the same eyes in both of those places. He sees us as he sees the righteousness of Christ. You are righteous when you mess up, and you are righteous when you're doing the right things, because it is about his grace given to us that saves us. And so we can live with humility and boldness in all situations. And we'll talk about this next week just a little bit. Guys, let us be a people who love and trust God because he has first loved us. Let's pray. Father, this morning, I ask that you would have us be a people who begin to see all the rituals and things that we have placed in our lives ahead of you. Even the places where we may not even know it. And that somehow we think by doing a certain thing or not saying certain words or saying other words, it makes us more holy. Or it makes you love us more. It places us in better standing with who you are. And all that is false. That's paganism. That's idolatry. And so I'd ask that you teach us to see the truth. Not just how we put things or rituals before you, but how we place ourselves before you. How many times our biggest issue is how we worship ourselves over worshiping you. That we gain our identity so many times by how we feel about ourselves and not the objective truth of what you have said about how you feel about us. So I ask that you would teach us to find all that we are in the understanding of your great grace that has been given to us. And in that understanding, we would not become myopic and self-centered. It would actually teach us to look outward like Paul was as he looks at these people running back into rituals, running back into slavery. And his desire for them was simply to be free. And I ask that our desire, not just for ourselves, but for those around us, is also to lead and walk with people into true freedom, which is only found in the good news of your rescue over us. So today, teach us, show us what worthless things we're putting our trust in. And because of your mercy, lead us continually back to you so we would trust you for our hope and our life and our freedom. And we ask this in your son's good name. Amen. As Brian drops the curtains, take a moment as we kind of head through this first song and just ask God, God, show me what things in my life right now I am trusting in to make me feel righteous before you. What things do I latch onto? What things do I tell myself that you will love me more if I do this? And be honest enough to look at it. Because it may be you as the center of your own life, as your own God, because you're appeasing yourself when you do those things. And God may reveal to you that you are the God of you, that you haven't really even trusted him. And yet today, you can come to a place where you lay that aside. And you can truly begin to trust him. Say, God, show me my worthless elementary principles. And then show me who you are. So I will live and worship you in what is actually freedom. Then come take communion, sing some songs, go to baptisms, bring a jacket. And let's celebrate who God is as we celebrate with one another the great salvation that we received.